Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer and WNYC, and now more Voter's Guide to the brand new New York State voting machines. We will do this in two parts, a Board of Elections official helping to roll out the new machines, and then a design critic who will warn you of design pitfalls to avoid so that you don't mess up when trying to vote on these new machines and new paper ballots. Also, we've done some reporting on this on our new politics website. It's freecountry.org. You can see an annotated ballot. In fact, you should consider going to this right now because we will walk through this annotated ballot with our designer coming up in a few minutes. Go to itsafreecountry.org. You can see an annotated ballot complete with specific things to watch out for to help you avoid mistakes when voting in this new system in New York State tomorrow. You can also see the video of WNYC's Ozzie Pabra and me, let's say mimicking a famous computer commercial that you may know, on whether to vote by hand or with the touchscreen machines. See it all at itsafreecountry.org. With me now, a commissioner from the New York City Board of Elections, Juan Carlos Polanco, J.C. Polanco. J.C., thanks a lot for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Brian. And by the way, I did see that video. Pretty innovative.
It was funny. It was really funny to do. You can guess which of us was the Mac and which was the PC, or you could see it for yourself at itsfreecountry.org. First, why did we scrap the lovable old one-armed bandit New York voting machines?
In 2000. Clunk. Yeah, right. In 2002, Congress passed the Help America Vote Act. And that was in response to the contested presidential elections of 2000 with the hanging chads and not really knowing what the intent of the voter was.
So we have no chads on these new ballots.
We have no chads on these new ballots. And Congress decided that we were going to be mandated as states and as municipalities to modernize our election system, not only to modernize it, but to make it easier for our disabled community to vote freely, independently, as well as making sure we have a actual paper trail, one that we can verify. In an effort to ever not see something like we saw in 2000.
What's funny is that people didn't realize that there were problems with the old clunkers because unlike the hanging chads, which we didn't have, unlike some of the computer-only voting machines, right, which have been suspect, these seem very solid. You go in and you mechanically pull the lever next to the candidate's name. You mechanically, I said before, clunk, open the curtain, close the curtain. Did they even need to be plugged in and use electricity?
Well, yes, they did. They did use electricity. A lot of people ask us, they say, commissioners, why did you get rid of the old lever machines? We love those machines. And they're going to love them when they're at the Museum of Natural History. I'm sure they'll be making nice coral reefs somewhere, artificial reefs. But the reality is that these...
And that's what they're actually going to be used for.
I hope there's some good usage somewhere. But the reality is that...
Coral reefs in the landfill. Never mind.
But, I'm sure they could be held for union and student body elections, right? The reality is that these machines did not have the accurate tally for us to be able to verify a paper trail, which is what the Help America Vote Act legislation called for.
So it's the paper ballot that is now required nationwide, a paper trail. So what will voters actually see when they go to the polls tomorrow?
When they first come in, I got to tell you, Brian, this is the first time in over 50 years that we're going to see a new voting system. I mean, President Eisenhower was around at the time that New Yorkers last saw a new system at a poll site. So when they first come in, nothing's changed as far as going to the table, registering, finding out what your election district is, and making sure that you pick up your paper ballot, your privacy sleeve, and a voter card. At that point, one of our elections professionals will walk you over to the area where she will be voting. Their voters are going to see a series of privacy booths where we make certain things available to them, including a tethered pen, a magnifying sleeve, an actual magnifying sheet, excuse me, Brian.
It's like a magnifying glass the size of a full sheet of 8.5 by 11
right,
paper.
Because, Brian, one of the complaints that we've heard from voters is the fact that the font is kind of small. Interestingly, the New York City Board of Elections, has to administer the election law and the state regulations, and we are not responsible. We're not allowed to increase the font. You know, hopefully the legislature is going to hear the concerns of the voters and will then change the law and allow for us to increase the font and make things easier for the voters.
And Ozzie Pabra and I had a lot of fun in this video that we mentioned with choosing between using a pen on the paper ballot or inserting the paper ballot into a machine and using the touch screen. Why is there a choice?
Well, there's a machine that you're referring to, Brian, is the ballot marking device. This was one of the new systems that the New York City Board of Elections rolled out a few years ago to allow for the disabled community to vote freely and independently and in their own privacy. You know, the old lever machine made it almost impossible if we had a wheelchair-bound voter, if someone had lost their extremities. Think about how difficult it must have been for those voters to go in and actually try to use an old lever machine or have to vote by absentee. The ballot marking device allows New York City voters with disabilities to vote and be able to mark their ballots and get them scanned. So we are very happy about the ballot marking device. And now all New Yorkers have the ability to use the ballot marking device. We encouraged the disabled community to come out and vote and utilize the system. It's there for them.
In fact, we have a question from a caller along those lines. So let's take that right now. Ellen in Manhattan, thank you for calling.
Hi, Brian. First-time caller and love your show.
Thank you.
And I'm glad that you're talking specifically about disability because I've been listening to your show and talk about the new system. And from what I can tell from all the conversation, there's no way for somebody who's totally blind to use the system. If you have to mark it with a pen or use a touch screen, that does not work for us.
Well, you know, that's a great question. The ballot marking device actually allows for a blind or visually impaired voter to vote freely and independently. Let me give you an example. We have a Braille keypad that would allow for our visually impaired voter to be able to vote and make their decisions on the ballot marking device so that we can actually have that ballot scanned for you. In addition, we also have a very special headphone, which allows for the voter to be able to also make their selections on the scanner before going in and actually casting the vote. So we have taken that into consideration.
And, you know, you might think, listeners might think at first, oh, well, a touchscreen ballot marking device, it's going to be cool. It's going to be like an iPod. It's going to be like an iPhone, whatever. Go in and touch, just boom, 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 instead of having to use the old pen on paper. But really, you recommend the pen and paper for most people, right?
Well, the commissioners do, and that's for purposes of efficiency. You know, it's going to be a very easy process once voters understand that it's as easy as 1, 2, 3. Get your ballot, mark your ballot, scan your ballot. We hope that New Yorkers begin to feel confident and comfortable in this new system and don't spend a lot of time waiting online to be able to vote.
Also, my experience, since you're good enough to have Ozzie and I come in and actually try out these new machines with a sample ballot last week. My experience in trying both systems was that the touchscreen was actually very slow. You couldn't see the whole ballot in front of you like you can when you have a paper ballot that you're holding in your hands. You only see one race at a time, and it seemed to me that there were even sort of partial views of some things, and then you had to scroll down to the next screen. And so that it's really, you're handicapping yourself in a way if you use the touchscreen ballot, and it'll take you a lot longer to vote. That was my first impression.
Well, you're right, Brian. It is going to take you longer. But, you know, when we have a very large disabled community, we want nothing more than for them to vote independently and in private. And we will make sure that the ballot marking devices are available to them. And we ask New Yorkers that don't need the ballot marking device to please vote with the paper ballot system that we've instituted this year.
What do you expect to be the biggest problems tomorrow? Obviously, the first time with a new system and, you know, first time in 50 years, as you say, there's going to be some kind of confusion. What do you expect it to center on?
We expect New Yorkers to have had the opportunity to hear that there's a new system. We ask them to visit our website and watch a video demonstration. We're hoping they're listening to us this morning. We have launched a public education campaign like we've never seen before in New York City, where we have visited every corner of New York, and we have actually brought the machines to the neighborhoods and have people actually touch them and see and practice how to vote before primary and the general election. So a lot of the concerns that we've heard throughout our time meeting the public and asking them for their concerns and providing some answers, we hope we've alleviated some of those concerns through our public education campaign. You're going to see us in buses, commercials, radio, and every community and ethnic newspaper through the general election to make sure that everybody's aware of what's going to happen tomorrow.
We're going to have on in just a minute when you go a design critic who is also with a group called Design for Democracy. So she thinks exactly about the intersection between design and democracy. And she did for our website, itsafreecountry.org, some design critiques of what's going to happen tomorrow that she's concerned about. One of them is watch for the vote for many contests. Some of them, you know, judge elections and things like that. You can vote for more than one. And it looks like that in these cases, you can vote for people whose names appear next to each other. And you have to fill in the little circles, like on the SATs, the bubble forms. Also, to make sure to fill out the oval that's in the same box as the candidate's name, because on this sample ballot, some ovals were actually physically closer to the candidate's names, but were in boxes for the other candidate.
Well, you know, the issues with the actual ballot layout are those for the legislature and the State Board of Elections, Brian, and we want to make sure that those concerns are heard by those organizations and bodies, because we want New Yorkers to feel confident that the New York City Board of Elections, its commissioners and staff, have been preparing relentlessly for tomorrow, and we will continue to work very hard for the voters in administering the election law.
So you're going to be gathering all these stories, and you're going to basically lobby the state to make any changes that seem necessary to make it easier?
Yeah, we've been working with good government groups for quite some time, and we ask them to continue putting the pressure on the legislature and the state board to make things easier for our New York City voters.
And listeners, as you may have heard me mention earlier or heard on the news this morning, we have a text message system tomorrow for you to report your experiences with the brand new ballots. And we think this will help everybody figure out what's going right and what's going wrong with this design. And what we're inviting you to do right now is text the word ballot to a phone number that we have, 30644. Text ballot to 30644. We'll send you instructions on how to participate and share your voting experience, and we'll send you a reminder tomorrow morning once we're collecting responses. Of course, your carrier's standard messaging rates apply, but if you want to participate in reporting your experience on the New York State voting machines on a text message system that we're setting up, just text the word ballot right now to 30644. Just takes 10 seconds to be part of the coverage. Text the word ballot to 30644. Commissioner, last question. Is there a three strikes and you're out rule? Somebody told me that if you make a mistake on a paper ballot, they'll give you another paper ballot. But if you screw up three of them, you're out.
You know, the legislature and the state board made that regulation. We have to abide by it, and you do have three opportunities in making mistakes. But I highly doubt that New Yorkers, when they see how easy this system is to use, is as easy as 1, 2, 3, Brian. Get your ballot, mark your ballot, scan your ballot. That's the message we're sending to voters. I don't think we'll have that many redos.
New York City Board of Elections Commissioner J.C. Polanco, good luck tomorrow.
Thank you so much, Brian.
And thank you for coming in today.
Thanks. Have a great day.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and let's keep talking about these paper ballots. I said we were going to talk to a Design for Democracy expert. She is Jessica Friedman Hewitt, former manager of AIGA's Design for Democracy. Welcome to WNYC. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks, Brian. It's great to be here.
And you can see Jessica's work on our New Politics website. As I mentioned, we have an article on this with an annotated ballot. So if you want to follow along here, go to itsafreecountry.org, and you can see, or you can do it later if you want, the annotated ballot. You can click on some of these particular spots that we're about to talk about that might be pitfalls in terms of casting an accurate vote tomorrow. So let's just go down these right now. And the first one that I just mentioned to the commissioner is what you call think inside the box.
That's right. We say that because, first of all, the grid layout that we're seeing here, folks will recognize that it's derived from the sort of same organizational structure that we found on the lever machines. However, that layout doesn't translate particularly well to paper. We lose the texture of the lever machines. We lose the sort of space that the lever machines provided. So what we have is candidate options in these tall and narrow boxes. And we have the selection oval, the mechanism by which you vote, sort of forced down into the bottom of the box in the lower left-hand corner. I'm sorry, rather in the lower right-hand corner. And
that's a good point to linger on, I think, for just a second, which is once you see the candidate's name, who you want to go, who you want to vote for.
That's right.
You go down to the lower right-hand corner of that same box to fill in the oval, correct?
Exactly right. And you want to make sure and do that. You want to stay within the box that your candidate name appears and that that oval also appears. If you sort of zero in on your candidate name but don't focus on staying within the box, ovals actually, by proximity, are maybe physically closer to political party icons for other candidates or names of other candidates. So if you vote purely by proximity and rather and not by box,
don't
you could miss
vote.
Don't just
go to the closest oval to the name. Go to the one that's within the lines of the box that contains that name. I mean, it sounds so obvious. It sounds like such common sense.
Right.
But I guess when you're standing there with this paper ballot and you want to get it over with, plus people are online, hopefully, a lot of people there to vote, kind of breathing down your back or you experience that, then you want to get it done and you feel a little pressure and you might mess it up.
Exactly right. And in fact, I mean, this isn't a problem of the same magnitude that we saw in Palm Beach 2000, but you mentioned the hanging chads before. Another issue in that election was the butterfly layout.
To me, that was the big issue, actually. I actually think, this is my personal opinion, but I actually think Al Gore would be president today were it not for the butterfly ballots, which I think caused thousands of people to vote accidentally for Pat Buchanan when they meant to vote for Al Gore.
It certainly enabled that, yes. And you can see, I mean, when you look at it in retrospect, as we do a lot, you can see why.
My producer, Megan, just reminded me that no matter what, Al Gore would not be president today because there would be three terms. But nevertheless, what's the analogy that you were going to make to the butterfly ballot from Florida?
Well, that was also an issue of ballot layout. That was, I mean, it was a layout that enabled a layout issue that enabled that misvote.
Same as voting inside the box.
Same as voting inside the box. Again, not as you know, I don't want to exaggerate this situation. But
another thing that that you mentioned in your piece is write-ins. Mm-hmm. If you're going to write in someone for an office, let's say I don't want to vote for any of the candidates in my district, and I want to write in Leonard Lopate. What do I do, and what's the pitfall?
Well, you might see if you're following along with us online that there is a write-in column. It's way over on the right side, the R-I-G-H-T, right side of the ballot, and the letters in which the that option is described are very small. So you really want to know that that's there in advance. And I want to reiterate that if your candidate does appear otherwise, you don't want to use that option.
Your candidate is on the ballot, then you don't want to write in their name. Because what? Do you risk invalidating your vote?
That's right. You risk invalidating your vote by overvoting. If you vote for the same person twice via write-in as well as via oval selection, you get an overvote.
Now, I don't know if you've gotten to actually do a run-through with the machines, as I have, but when I made some mistakes, some on purpose, some were actual mistakes, in filling out the paper ballot and inserted it into the machine, I got, for example, an error message that said, you have overvoted. Or an error message in another case that said, you have undervoted. These are terms that people are going to have to, you know, get used to in New York because until you learn what they mean, people don't know what they mean. And the overvoted, what does that mean? Undervoted, it doesn't tell you that you mark two candidates for the same race when you're only allowed to mark one. That's overvoting.
Right.
Or that perhaps you didn't choose a candidate at all in a particular race, and it will tell you that you undervoted if you skip a race, and then you have to make a choice on the touchscreen at that point whether to let the ballot go through as an undervoted ballot and live with that stigma for the rest of your life, or go back and figure it out.
That's right. Let me make two points about that. One is I am not sure that in all cases you're notified of undervoting. I think that is true on the BMD, the electronic marking device. I think that that's not always true just via the scanner. You definitely are notified by about an overvote. And that actually, that means that undervoting is a sort of more insidious type of error. And I hope we get a chance to talk about a few pitfalls associated with undervoting.
Go ahead.
Okay. Great. One thing that we see is an instruction to vote for any two. Now, that comes up in the left side of the ballot, and it is in very small text again, and we're concerned that voters will miss that, not realize that they can vote for two candidates in some races.
In some races, you can vote for multiple candidates. I think maybe state committee person for the Democratic or Republican state committees, that might have vote for any two or more. And you have to vote for the right number of candidates in that box.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you can vote for up to the number of candidates. Another thing we're concerned about is this, a demo ballot anyway, shows a referendum question on the back of the ballot. That won't be an issue for the primary, but the back of the ballot is on first glance, it just sort of looks like a lot of words, and we're concerned that voters won't realize that that's actually a voting space as well.
And that's something that we'll have to remind people again about before the November election, when there will be at least two in New York City ballot questions. I don't know about the rest of the state. But yes, the design of this ballot makes you turn the ballot over to get to those questions. Mm-hmm. And on the sample ballot that I saw, it was very fine print, even smaller print than for the candidates. And so it looks like it's just that, fine print,
mm-hmm.
just sort of some, you know, technical mumbo jumbo. But it's really the ballot questions.
Exactly right. And speaking of technical mumbo jumbo, let's just go back to the terminology you were discussing, undervoting and overvoting. We absolutely agree with you. Those aren't terms that general public should have to learn. There are simpler ways to describe those concepts. And that's one of the principles. The National Institute of Standards and Technology has sort of a checklist of how to compose good instructional language for ballots, and that's one of the pitfalls they identify, is using overly complex language. So we hope that that when lawmakers in Albany take up the issue of what language must appear on the ballot, what layout may appear on the ballot, we hope that they will enable the state of New York and the Elections Board to follow modern best practices in design, in instructional language, both.
By the way, our news director, John Keefe, who wrote the article about this with your help on itsafreecountry.org, just told us that on the primary ballot, the write-ins, if you're going to write somebody in, may not actually be on the right side. They might be on the bottom. Do you happen to know?
Actually, that makes sense. I understand that on the primary, in the demo ballot, we have the offices down the column, just sort of down the left side. On the primary, I understand that the offices will be along the top because there won't be sort of these political party columns. That obviously won't make sense because you're voting all within one party.
Right.
So actually, it would make sense that the write-in would appear at the bottom of the column as opposed to the end of the row. I mean, again, the fact that we're talking about rows and columns, some people have trouble even reading information in rows and columns, and we're asking them to vote in rows and columns. So, you know, I hope, again, that Albany enables us to go to a more paper-appropriate layout in the future.
Well, I think that's enough of this for today. I think you careful listeners are now going to be over-prepared to go in and cast a ballot tomorrow. But it's going to be an interesting new experience for New York primary voters. After all the years of the clunky old lever machines, lovable as they were, they have given way to the paper ballot era. Just tell me, since with Design for Democracy, I assume you looked at many different voting machine designs all over the country.
That's right.
How'd they do in New York, relatively, in coming up with this new one?
Well, I mean, it's hard to assign blame because we know that this is regulated by legislation. So, it's not that New York had a lot of leeway in coming up with this design.
But relative to other states, how would you rank it?
It's on the poor end of the spectrum in terms of the extent to which it helps voters use itself, in terms of how it communicates to voters this is how to vote. It should be a lot easier to vote than this.
According to Jessica Friedman Hewitt, former managing director of the American Institute for Graphic Artists.
It's the Professional Association for Design, formerly known as the American Institute for Graphic Arts. Yep.
And their Design for Democracy project. Design for Democracy is what she managed. Thank you for doing some Design for Democracy for us.
Thank you, Brian.
And again, you can see the annotated ballot and Jessica's work, giving you the guide to it on our New Politics webpage, New Politics website, which is itsafreecountry.org. It's a free country. .org. And again, you can text the word ballot to 30644 and we'll send you instructions on how to participate and share your experience with the new machines tomorrow. You can text right now. We'll send you a reminder tomorrow morning as well once we're collecting the responses, and your carrier standard text messaging rates do apply. But again, if you want to participate and share your experience with these new machines, text ballot to 30644.